What is up? It's Tuesday night. Welcome to another episode of Inside the Game. I'm DJ Leaf. This is episode 67, and I am joined, of course, as always, by EG DeMuslim, EG Indra, and EG In Control. In Control, switching things up a little bit, put a backdrop behind himself to make it appear as if he is in another location. I like it, Jeff. Mixing.
Very devious.
Very devious. Hello, gentlemen. How are you?
Good.
Yeah. Good. Wow. DeMuslim. Good. Yeah. Things are good. Yeah. Because you've got widow mines. Yeah.
Yes.
You can always dictate, you know, the mood of a host on Inside the Game by how well their race is doing on the ladder. Isn't that right?
Yeah, I'm happy. I'm not going to try and deny it. They're pretty fun.
I'm just fucking around. We'll talk about that later. It'll be great. We did not have a show last week because Slasher decided he wanted to take all of the glory. But as compromise, he, got Jeff onto Live on 3, which is a welcome addition. Thank you, Jeff, for doing that.
Yeah, it was a pleasure.
And that's going to be one of the major topics that we're talking a little bit about, WCS. We only have a few additional details, but, of course, I really wanted to get your guys' opinion on it. We've also had a lot of just StarCraft going on in general, whether that be GOM in action, various leagues sort of kicking off qualifiers or announcing. But a lot of great action to talk about this week. And we're going to jump right into things and talk about WCS. So where do we start, even? Other than, like, hey, the announcement that kind of everyone knew about is announced, and here we are. We have WCS, and I don't know. Who wants to give their initial reactions? Jeff, we kind of talked about on the show. I'd love to hear from Greg or Ben about your initial reactions regarding the WCS.
I wasn't there for the announcement itself, so I was just kind of like trying to pick stuff together or piece stuff together via Twitter, which was kind of scary because at first it sounded like it was all going to be online. And then it sounded like Koreans were just going to dominate every region. That part turned out to be true. But the online stuff, at least, isn't. They're going to move towards a really as offline as they possibly can, which is excellent. Online is just, it's never going to be a legitimate competition. It's too hard to ensure that it's fair and that everyone's playing legitimately and all that. The region lock stuff, the only thing that really bothers me about it is that they can't seem to make up their mind. Like an interview from TL with Mike Morham just came out where he just flat out says, we're trying to encourage competition and whatnot and have Koreans in every region because that'll make people play better. And I don't think it'll work that way, but I think it's okay to say that and have that as a goal. But then there was the Q&A that was released the other day where I forget who it was, but whoever was answering question said that Kevin Johnson said that they didn't do the region lock because of difficulties with people who don't line up with the regions and all the stuff like that, which I think is just a dumb cop-out. So I don't know, it kind of bothers me that they're not really giving a straightforward answer to it. And also that they don't seem to have a lot of the details like set in stone. Like everyone was complaining about it because the players all had to choose which region we're going into. I forget when the deadline was, but we had to do it before a lot of this information came out. So we didn't know like what the prize pool would be, what kind of competition we'd be getting into or getting out of, depending on what region we pick and all that kind of. So it seems like they really rushed the announcement, and players especially shouldn't be forced to make that decision before the information's out there. But overall, I mean, it's awesome. Blizzard's dumping a ton of money at esports.
Right.
It's obviously a good thing. It's just there's little bits and pieces that are kind of wrong with it.
Ben, what are your thoughts, your initial reactions here to WCS?
Well, Greg nailed a lot of it. It's awesome. I love WCS, and the fact that they're pumping lots more money into it is also fantastic. One of the things, though, I feel like region locking, I thought it was going to be based on purely like where you live and stuff. So you have like the North Americans duke it out, and then the Europeans duke it out and whatever. But the fact that everybody can kind of go anywhere, and they don't really... It just feels like a total world, like go wherever you want to be, and it's all a total mishmash. I don't feel it's very well segregated, and I don't like that. I like the idea of continents battling out to see who's the best in the continent, like be it living there or what have you, not just, hey, let's throw some Koreans here, some Europeans here, some Americans here. It just feels very messy to me, and I don't really like that too much.
I just want to mention, because you bring up a good point, DeMuslim, is that the 2012 WCS focused on that national sort of approach to it all. Which, in my opinion, is always great. You know, World Cyber Games made a great model out of it for many years until they just kind of, like, lost sight of their game selection. But, you know, that was well, I mean, it's just being honest in the nicest way possible. It is something, though, that is cool because you do get that national level. I think what one of the problems was is that you had all these blowouts happening on even a national level that the tournament itself may not have gotten exciting until you hit those regional, those regional events. I don't know. What do you?
So I actually had a chance to talk with someone that's kind of a part of the decision-making of... Well, not necessarily the decision-making, but they're in the know on what's going on behind scenes. So I have a couple things to clarify and then some new takes on things that have been announced and just to kind of push out there. First and foremost, one of the things that this person stressed to me very clearly was that this is an extremely ambitious thing. So a lot of what's kind of circling around the misinformation, the lack of information, stuff like that, is shamelessly a result of how large this is. They're literally unifying KESPA, GOM, ESL / Turtle, you know, MLG. Like, they're like everything's coming together and they're all moving in different directions. And all of those different parts have different leadership bodies. So a lot of what's going on right now in terms of information that we're being fed is kind of a result of this being so ambitious and stuff comes out that's wrong. So part of that was that ESFI reported that the prize package would be extremely top-heavy. Those numbers are actually wrong. They are just flat-out wrong. I've been assured that the distribution of prize will be much, much, much more healthy and robust from top to bottom. Obviously, if you win the league, you're going to win a shit ton of money. But if you go out in the round of 32 or 16, you're not going to take out a pittance of money for 3 months. It's supposed to be much, much more healthy. They couldn't tell me what that number is, but they assured me that the prize money that we have, that breakdown, is false. It's incorrect.
What was ESFI World reporting? Do you remember?
Something like in eighth place, you get $2,500.
Okay.
Round of 32, you get $300. Just those kind of numbers.
And so, what would they be? Or what,
like I
what
said, I don't have specifics, but it's just to be much
it's
more healthy.
Like three times that? Four or five?
I should hope so. I mean, if you're going to do like a season league and you're going to be in the premier division in one of these leagues where you're like the top dog, round of 32 or 16 should be a notable achievement like it was in the GSL. Like if I go out in the round of 32 code S, I am a badass. And if you hand me a $300 check, I'm going to look at you and be like, you know, okay, thanks. I appreciate that. But I feel like my accomplishment is much higher than this, and it should be, right? So if you're going to replace GSL with this WCS system in Korea and abroad, I feel like the prize distribution should be representative of that. Other information that kind of came out from this conversation, too, and I have a lot to share, actually, was we talked about region locking because that seems to be like the big hot-button subject. And people are going to have to forgive me because, again, these are not official words. This is just me relaying a conversation that I was allowed. I asked this person if it's okay to go public with it, and they said, sure, it's absolutely fine. The idea here is that for this first year, one of the natural evils of this is that a certain portion of it does have to be played online. That's because try to imagine this system where they're like, all right, in 1 week, you know, we want to have a studio ready with top-notch
right.
competition.
It would be a massive failure.
So this first year is going to have that online portion of it. Round of 16 will be played offline. And that's the system we're talking about. Of course, those Koreans are going to have to fly themselves to these places. MLG has said that they can fly. Like if the studio is playing it out of New York, they could fly to California, and then MLG would pay for the flight from California to New York, which is, you know, kind of a nice compensation
do
that way,
you,
but they will only pay within.
Do you guys interpret that then as a potential evolution to how Riot is doing it with the LCS, where they are currently doing North America and Europe studio-based, where the teams are taking place in these?
I mean, the thing is it absolutely looks to a T like that's the case, but every single time a Blizzard higher-up has been asked that question, they very... As Slack
right,
would
well,
almost
then,
smugly say, well, we were doing
sure,
it.
Sure, fair enough. Then let's just erase all that shit and say, do you feel that based off of what they're saying, they plan to have a studio with players playing in it on a weekly basis?
That's where I was going with this.
Okay.
That's new information that I haven't gotten to say just yet. That's that this first year will be played mostly online, but where they're aiming for, hopefully at the end of this year or perhaps next year, certainly, is that they will have not any portion of this played online. You will have to live in an area where you can travel to that studio and play your match in that studio, just like the LCS system.
Let's talk about that for a second.
Go ahead.
Well, you guys now for the last 2 years have done the travel thing. And what if next year, good opportunities there, there's like 16 people, you're one of them. Would you prefer to do some sort of a, you know, 8-10 week, however many weeks, like structure competition, you're living in this place and you're doing these weekly matches? Would you all be down for that if given the opportunity?
Oh, 100%. That's a million times better than having to take, like, well, if it's an international thing, sometimes it's 10-12 hour flight. You got to deal with jet lag, and you cannot play your best. Whereas here, you can just be totally comfortable. That's been one of the biggest advantages that Korea's always had in terms of esports. They can set up everything in Seoul, because if anything matters in Korea, it's in Seoul, and people are willing to move there to do it. And so they can actually have this centralized thing where they can have all the teams living together. They don't have to pay for flights, so that saves them a lot in terms of costs.
Yep.
It's just so much better in every way. Like, if they can actually move towards that, that'd be fantastic.
So imagine that tripling, basically. One in Europe, one in NA, and that's the system they're going to aim to. So the other thing to add on to this, because one of the questions that then got asked about that and will inevitably be asked is, well, how come, as Ben said, you know, why isn't there true region locking where it's based on residency? And the answer that comes out of that, and it will kind of continue to be said, is that at least what they're saying is that they were afraid of the legality of that. Being able to, like, prove citizenship, marriage, all that stuff, it got kind of dicey. So they'd rather just be like, you need to play your match here, and if you're willing to put yourself there, then that's the esports dedication they're looking for anyways. So if I'm a Korean and I'm really good and I want to make bank off those skills, then yeah, I'm going to travel. But what they're hoping to do, and this is a little bit more to tie in what Mike Morheim has been saying, would be, well, if I'm a North American player, I now have that, like Greg just said, I have that motivation that in the past I didn't. Traveling to Korea, competing against strictly other Koreans for those few spots for that money is not very much so a good bet. But playing in San Francisco or Cologne, Germany or something like that, and still playing against Koreans but not nearly as many, and being more local so I don't have to, like, exit out my family, my culture, my country, or, you know, my continent at least, then it's much more possible and lucrative for me.
I think it's definitely much more encouraging. Like, it's an easier decision to make. You don't have, like Jeff said, you don't have to up and go to Seoul to be a pro gamer. But I don't think it's going to end up being that much more lucrative. I think, I don't know, I just feel like if they keep the region locking the same as it is now, it's going to end up being, like, however many slots there are, that many Koreans, minus two or three savants in every region. Like, you'll have Stefano in Europe,
right,
always. And then you'll have, like, Scarlet and NA or whatever. But I think it's going to end up almost totally Korean. So, I mean, if that's what they're aiming for, if they just want the highest possible skill in all the regions,
well,
then that's going to work out well. But if they really want to encourage foreigners, like LCS, I'm pretty sure that's actual, like, I don't know if it's nationality or locality or whatever. But
you,
I know,
just
there's
have
no
to be at the studio.
Well, I don't know. I know there's no Korean teams. I know that Koreans and Chinese are better than at least North Americans. And I know that they are not, any of them, in the North American LCS. So I imagine there have to be some kind of rules blocking that. So if they found a way to do it, I don't see why Blizzard couldn't. So
what I would say, though, is that I'm going to put my debater hat on for a second and say that I 1,000% agree with you. I think Blizzard's logic, though, on this case would be that they're putting more bullets in the chamber for a chance for those foreigners that you described, the savants, to have more of an opportunity as opposed to just Korea, just versus Koreans. Now, yes, they'll still be playing Koreans, but it'll be a little bit more domestic, and it'll be a lot more watered down than it would be if I was to go to GSL and be like, I'm going to place in the top 16 of the GSL, and that's how I'm going to make my money.
Yeah.
So it's more exposure, it's more opportunities. It's still probably going to be 85 to 90% Korean, but there's more opportunity for it to not be that case, and I think that's the best Blizzard could do. I'd like to hear an argument against that.
It's definitely better. I just, if what they're aiming for is encouraging foreign esports and actually, you know, having foreigners succeed at tournaments that people care about, then it's not going to happen here. You're still going to have Koreans winning everything, I think. Because, I mean, if you look at the European tournaments, there's often not too many Koreans there because it's so expensive to travel there from Korea. You still have a Korean champion like 90% of the time plus. So, and if they can do that off two or three, and given the number of Koreans that we know are going to be in North America at least, I don't know, you're going to have a Korean winner every time.
I mean, like I said, I think you're right. I just think there's just more of a chance for it to be better.
Yeah,
let's say let's just say 3 seasons go by and we are peeking into 2014, and exactly what Idra, you have sort of put out there, has happened, and that we're just seeing a top 16 spread out Korean, you know, winner base. Does Blizzard turn around at that point and go, all right, you know what, we actually have to make it so your region is kind of based off your nationality? Well, go ahead, answer that question. What do you think?
Oh, well, at that point, they're kind of fucked because a bunch of Koreans just moved over to North America to play in their leagues, and they're, like, making money off that, and Blizzard is, in turn, making money off them because of the viewership they draw. So they then turn around and say, nope, you can't play in this anymore. It's kind of, like, I mean, they could, but it'd be really fucked up, and I think they would get a lot of public disapproval for that. But it really comes down to, like, what their goal is. Do they want foreigners to win, or do they want more, like, competitive integrity, or just, like, what are they aiming for?
Ben, you're a little quiet about all this. I mean, as a competitor, certainly, and you've got that unique situation too, where, you know, obviously, you can represent a lot of.
I'm a foreigner. Like, in terms of, like, I'm kind of living in America now and getting the work visa all sorted out, and that costs a lot of money. And I thought it was mainly because of this region lock that was going to be happening. Like, this is where I'm going to choose to live and partake in tournaments and such. And then I realize it's all going to be online, and there's Koreans that can just partake in this anyway, willy-nilly, and it just means that a lot of the work that I went through and a lot of the money that I went through and a lot of the real trouble I went through is just kind of like, oh, I didn't really need to go through that because these Koreans are being given a bone to go partake wherever they want to. So yeah, I am a little sad about it. I understand why it's happening the way it is, but I do think they should have been a little more callous with it. For example, Polt and Violet, who lived in America Polt's going to be living in America for a long time. I think it would have been fine for these guys to partake in American tournaments or the American WCS, but the fact that when you see the names that are signed up to the WCS in North America, you're going to giggle a little bit because they're people that have never really given a shit about the North American scene, and they're just coming here for the money, really. So, yeah, I feel that it's definitely a bit lost with me.
Yeah, that conversation I had, the person stressed that this is a evil that's a part of the system for this first season, if you will. Once the CODAS, or I guess they call it the Premier Division's, like, official, it's populated. From that point forward, once we move into the next year, those people that are playing those online matches and then traveling to one qualifying tournament will be like, all right, well, now you're part of the Premier Division, so you're going to be here every week to play your match. Where are you going to live? And I can't imagine Nestie getting an apartment downtown, you know, San Francisco, and it's like, sup, I'm Nest T, I eat noodles, and then I play in the WCS NA. Like, that's not, I think there'll be people that do that, but I don't know that it's going to be 65 Koreans just trying to play in the Challenger League in North America for a chance to get in there. I don't see that happening as much. Again, it's going to happen, but I don't think we're going to have little Koreatown in San Francisco that's like this weird StarCraft hub. They'll call it like Mini Seoul. I don't know. But,
or like Little Korea or something.
Yeah, little. I mean, they probably do have a Little Korea is the joke, but I don't know. I just don't think it's going to be quite that bad. And then the other information this person gave me too, that's kind of new, because this is another thing people talk about. So one of the questions was, once I declare which region I'm playing in, how do I switch? And they said, ideally, like, let's say I'm a Korean and I'm playing in the NA division. If I wanted to switch back to Korea or Europe, I would lose my Code S spot, and then I'd have to go into the Challenger division for that other region that I want to play in.
And wouldn't that make people hesitate even more?
Yeah,
it should. Yeah.
Yep.
So I guess I hadn't really thought about the practicality of actually playing matches every week in a live situation. So that will discourage a lot.
Right. So there's still going to be some. There's going to be some hilarious moving. Like, there's going to be.
We've already gotten some of that, though.
Like, yeah.
Sage randomly ending up in Europe.
Yeah, like Axiom has come out and said, I mean, and who knows, these things can change, this stuff's not written in stone, but they've said that they will stay in Korea, so who knows what they're going to do for this season, but when it comes to offline, Axiom will play the Korean ones, unless right. they want to move them all over here. And again, if I'm a company owner and I've got 7 Koreans, do I want to move them away from Korea for this tournament and then pay for everything over here? I don't know that I do. And we have to actually say this, guys, by the way. Koreans don't like to live in non-Korea. I'm just going to come out and say it to you. So
they travel with suitcases full of instant ramen. Like, they...
Literally.
Yeah.
And they, like, fucking hack YouTubes to get weird music through the interwebs because they can't tolerate... And I know I'm speaking largely in part in generalities, but just trust me, in my experience with the many Koreans that I've interacted with, by and large, they don't like it. Yeah, it's true. They don't like to live outside of Korea. They find our food worse. They find speaking in English very embarrassing and hard.
Who's the exception to the rule?
Probably Violet. Violet Polt. Yeah, Polt landed some American girl. And Violet has landed thousands of American girls, so he's those two.
Yeah. Polt already spoke English pretty well, so that's pretty comfortable. Yeah. But it's the same reason that foreigners don't like to go to Korea too much. It's a pretty big culture shock. It's much harder to live there. Just like, you're very out of your element.
So it's going to happen, but I think it's not quite the exit. Like, this first season, by the way, is what people say it's going to be. The WCSNA is going to be hilarious with how much Korean is there. And I think the Europeans will get a good mix, too. But I think once the rule, like, this is kind of the sad
sounds
part
like
about
the setup for a perfect epileptic.
That's what I'm
video,
saying.
Actually.
Oh,
like,
well,
you know, like this season in North America, WCS, the premier players from North America, Violet.
Yeah.
Paul, yeah.
It's gonna be pretty funny, but I think what's actually, in my opinion, even more funny. Is when these rules do get flushed out and it's explained to the Koreans, like, congrats, you're in the Premier Division, you know, you won a great qualification round, here's a big giant check. Now, next year, how are you going to get to the studio each Saturday of the week? And that Korean's going to be like, what do you mean? I'll play online. And they're like, no. And they're like, so what do I do now? And they go, well, you're going to have to declare Korea, and you're going to have to get through that qualification round, which is basically Code A. Good luck. And they're like, no. What if the fucking NA players go to Korea? Huh? What if the Koreans come to NA and the North Americans go to Korea?
There's too many Koreans. They won't send all of them.
I know. That'd be awesome, though. Round of eight match. I'm Nick. This is Dan. We've got TT1 from Team Root going up against Hawk. This should be a great PvP.
All right, we'll touch a little bit more on WCS during the open phones and encourage any, unless you had some more information that we need to talk about. I want to just make sure we get through our other subjects so we can have some solid time to chat on the phones and expand.
They just wanted it to be really announced that the prize money is going to be much more evenly distributed. The region lock thing is not some weird nefarious, like, absent-minded thing. They really worked on it, and when Blizzard says... It's too fickle, legalistically. I don't think that's the lazy answer. I'm pretty damn sure they worked hard on it. They're just too big to do otherwise. And then just know that the confusion's because of so many moving parts, which is an excuse. So you don't have to forgive them, but you can just know that that's what's going on.
All right, let's talk about the somewhat associated but not really. News item that has also come out as like on top of this, and that was the fact, and we talked about it 2 weeks ago on Inside the Game when you know, basically we knew that IPL was canceled. We talked and speculated a little bit about what may happen, and I think even one of the things we said is that it was possible that we could see something like Blizzard picking up staff and this actually happened, but it is official. And it doesn't come in line with the announcement of WCS, but it certainly does come in line with the fact that now that Blizzard is promoting WCS, there probably needs to be a bunch of content created. And this particular article is about the IGN co-founder on the IPL sale to Blizzard, but essentially a lot of the individuals that worked for IPL are now content producers and esports are in esports positions at Blizzard. And I mean, it's certainly great to see a lot of talented individuals get picked up by Blizzard. Do you guys have any thoughts on, you know, content creation with these guys? I don't think we're going to see IPL suddenly come out of the woodwork or anything. It's not necessarily the case, but these people did know one thing, and that was creating content. And Blizzard traditionally hasn't necessarily created content like some of the other developers and publishers have demonstrated great ability to do. But any thoughts or comments on this?
I'm just really curious about what exactly they're going to be doing, because we know that they've partnered with MLG. Like, MLG, they're going to be the ones running the tournament. So it's not like they hired IPL to host their stuff. Maybe for, like, the regional finals or the yearly finals or, like, the consummation of the season. Maybe they have to do that. But other than that, what are they going to be doing? Are they going to be, like, the sports center of WCS? Are they going to do stuff like that? Because, like you said, we haven't seen Blizzard do that before. I'm curious what kind of content they're actually going to be building around WCS, because like it can't be a coincidence that these two happen at the same time.
So I think everyone's curious, because they haven't really said. There was like mentions that they do Fight Club type stuff. They're definitely going to like just create content, because if you think about Blizzard content, it's like those videos that they release and then awkward tall stool interviews with the same three guys, and that's the content that they produce. But now it's looking to be more like, here's a video, here's a funny little skit, you know, here's a graphic about this coming show match that we're hosting. It's just more manpower. Like, one of the things that's been kind of kept under wraps, but Blizzard has a lot of people working on StarCraft II, but not necessarily a lot of people in the esports division. So they're kind of populating that and filling it with people that have that experience. The really important thing for me, though, is because I want to know how much of a sensationalist title Slasher gave the interview when he said Blizzard buys IPL. That's shit, right? He hires David Ting and Kevin Nock, and that's
I know they've hired more than that. I'm not sure.
Well, no, like the big guys. They hire a bunch of people, but they don't own the label or the technology.
There could be quotation marks around that.
Can I get a fuck Slasher week? Can we do that?
You can get a fuck Slasher. For sure.
Let's get a fuck Slasher. A little bit of a fuck Slasher. Fuck Slasher. That's what I cared about.
I don't know. Around 30 people or so. Some of the equipment, and because there was technology and maybe content and assets behind it, technically it could have been classified as a sale. But and there the chat goes.
That's all I wanted, really.
But. Keep in mind that the using it in the connotation of Blizzard buys IPL insinuates that the league will continue on, and that's not the case.
Not going to happen.
That was not the case. Why would they continue IPL?
Right.
If you're going to do WCS, like there's no reason, right? Now they have a content group that can create content for WCS or coordinate. I don't know what that's going to be either. Are we going to finally see an organized, focused, game center? Oh, wait, that's Game Spot. They've already got that. But you know what I'm talking about. Yeah. So, I don't know.
I'm just glad those guys got a job. Like, I'm going to be honest with you, when this whole thing started to happen, I really thought IPL was going to get bought up by some investment entity or some developer or somebody that's like, wow, this league is doing a pretty great job. Why don't we just keep it as is? Rebrand it and let these guys continue to work, but with our flag swaying in the wind. But it didn't happen and it fell apart. Then I got really worried, because I think Kevin Naki, I think your Frank Murray's, Josh Suss, like these David Ting, these are guys that have passion for this game and then have experience running major stuff. I want them to have a job in esports somewhere, because I want to believe that it's sustainable. And I think that Blizzard stepped up to the plate, saw these talented people, and gave them a job, and I think that's a really cool thing to see.
Any other comments on?
We just have to. We kind of have to wait and see what they're going to do with them, because all they've said so far is we got them.
And
there's going to be a new office in San Francisco.
Yeah,
actually, the fact that the fact that a lot of them are going to the esports team is kind of cool, because after Rob left, I believe the esports team was a person. So it's good that they can beef that up a bit now.
Yeah, it was. Or a couple. Either way. And
I think it was a person.
I think one of the interesting things is the San Francisco office. As, you know, that's certainly something different for Blizzard, as they've had a lot of, you know, they have worldwide offices, but in North America, you know, centralized there in Irvine. Very curious that they're going to be doing that. And there's a few other major esports companies up in up at San Francisco, so certainly a growing city for that. Hots talk. Hots talk. Hots talk. Need like some fucking flash.
DJ Wheat calls this section "The Muslim." How do you sleep at night?
Really well.
So
he doesn't. He just wakes up and plays more StarCraft because it's so goddamn fun for him.
I love it. So I'm watching Stefano's stream, and I see him Q versus QXC, but it was one of those things where I'm like doing some work, and so I come back maybe like 25 minutes later, 30 minutes later. And he's playing a Terran, and it's like late game. I'm not even realizing that it's still QXC, but I'm like watching this guy pretty much like pull in 20 Widow Mines at a time using the drill upgrade, and just like burrowing in this really sort of weird zoning way, you know. And Stefano would come out, he'd grab the fungal, and then he'd maybe get a couple hits with his Broodlords, and kill a few, and then like 20 more Widow Mines would come in. It's like, holy shit, man, you know. And then it would just repeat until there was about 100 Widow Mines. Well, it wasn't that many. But I tweeted about it. I was like, holy shit. And what ended up happening was a bunch of people getting really salty over like, that particular game in general. Greg, I think even you might have
jumped in. I said something about it. I don't remember.
On a couple things. I saw one guy who was like, if you go and Fester Broodlord, there's no way you can lose to this. And I was like, dude, what I just saw was like, you can lose to this shit. So anyway.
In theory, just more mines is better. They just,
right?
It's just more of them.
You take
more shit dying.
Because is it that big of a deal to sacrifice a 75-25 unit, but to do a fuckload of damage as a result?
No, it's like a Baneling pretty much in cost, and it's pretty freaking awesome.
A thing that revives itself if not detected.
So let's talk about it from the Muslim's point of view, right? So like we've talked about the Widow Mine before, but we've certainly seen some shifts in the meta game, and late game mass Widow Mine is certainly something. But just talk about how the Widow Mine, as it relates to you, the Muslim, on the ladder right now in competitive play.
Okay, well, I can talk about two things. Competitive play, Widow Mines are pretty much a necessity right now for like defensive play and holding off a lot of all-ins from Zerg. Early Roach play, be it like 8 or 9 Roaches with Burrow at tier 1, and I mean really, really early, like hits around 6-minute mark, you barely have anything out at this point, and they can Burrow and regen health and stuff. And that's when you really, really need Widow Mines to deal that big punch. They don't one-shot the Roaches, but they deal a lot of damage. A lot of good play with like 4 Widow Mines and little Bio Squad around the 11-minute mark while you're taking a third and search. It's all very, very solid. That game in particular with Stefano, though, like I saw it on Reddit and I ended up watching it through because I was like, I actually want to see what QXC does because I've never used Widow Mines in excess of like 10, you know, maybe like 15 max. But yeah, he went loco with them. And one of the things that happened in that game, Stefano went for like a Roach push and denied the third and everything, did a lot of damage. But then like, so he had a huge advantage and then he just held off and he kind of took bases and he played the safe approach. And he let QXC just kind of expand down the right side of the map and just put mines absolutely everywhere, get planetaries, use Thor mothership or a Thor drop and stuff and kill bases and then further zoned him. I think that was Stefano kind of messing around a little bit. And if he just chose to like do a massive Roach drop, he would have won the game. But he did mess around a little bit. But once it gets to that late stage situation, yeah, you're pretty screwed as a Zerg.
Yeah, because I actually played QXC, and he did a similar thing. And actually, the same thing happened. I had gone 2 base Muta, and I did a lot of damage early on. I think I killed his third, or I denied it for a long time and killed a bunch of units and whatnot. And so I just kept trying to lean on him and get him out of the game because like, I thought it was over. And so in that situation, when like you are continuing to apply pressure, he actually just goes like mass Widow Mine drops, like pumping constant medevacs out, and every time one's out, he loads it up and sends it to a mineral line. And so he just kind of wears you down. And the mines plus a couple of tanks and turrets are so good defensively.
What map?
Planet S. So it's pretty hard for Zerg to expand a ton anyway. But, so yeah, if you're being aggressive, he just counterattacks, and Widow Mines are so efficient if you can't focus really, really well on them. Because, like, Zerg, you have to make sure you have a couple of units going through first, or just you always have to have detection and whatnot. So if you're trying to do that on multiple fronts, that's a lot more difficult than it is for Terran to just burrow them on multiple fronts. So I don't know if attacking is even really the answer to it.
Like, just talking about that Stefano game alone, like, there was a point where Stefano denied, or had his third, QXC had his third denied, and he was like Roach attacking around, killing tanks and stuff. Then there was a wall, at the natural with one tank behind it, and then like Widowmine's running out, and Stefano just backed off and started taking his fourth and fifth base. If he just chose to kind of deny the third further, then went lots of overlords and dropped and stuff while putting up static. I know it's a total, like, what-if hypothetical situation. I think QXC would have been in a lot of trouble. Whenever I tend to go mech and there's a kind of a keeps applying pressure or even gets the combo where it's, like, Roach, Hydra Viper around the 14-15-minute mark, I tend to die. I can't pull it off for some reason. And I think it's only about, like, Zerg's giving the Terran the time that he needs. And I don't know when QXC took those bottom right expansions or whatever, but he just seemed to have a lot of time to do it. And remember, there's like Burrow that you can use to deny expansions. On a map like Whirlwind, having one Ling on each base denying in the bottom right would have worked wonders for Stefano. But yeah, once it got to the late game situation where he just mines around the whole map and Stefano had an army of Corruptors and then BCs and Ravens came out, it did look unstoppable. And the main thing is, it's much easier for Terran to do that than it is for Zerg to defend it.
I can't seem to find the exact moment that there is a lot of stuff, because this game actually turns out to be quite long. Greg, I kind of saw a cringe in your face a little bit when you said that, you know, Stefano was kind of playing around, and you said that you had met it. One of the things Stefano said after the game was just frankly, like, in the late game, even denying expansions and getting them up at a cost of, you know, at a cost of 75-25, with their ability to completely wipe out, you know, what we saw, a bunch of Corruptors, a bunch of Broodlords. Any thoughts on that at all?
I haven't played anyone who, like, actually gone to the late game with anyone who just went mass mines. I've played against mech players who will incorporate, like, 10 to 12 and try and run them up into your Broodlords. That's not actually enough because they bug out against the Broodlings or if you fungal them or whatever. So I'm not sure exactly. Most of the people I play end up going with, like, lots of Ravens with Viking support and then maybe adding in Battlecruisers, which is really strong itself. But, yeah, it's the same, you know, as it's always been. Widowmines are just incredibly cost-efficient, and it's pretty hard. Like, they require a lot more attention for Zerg to deal with than they do for Terran to use in most situations. So the more spread out the map is and the more battles are going on at once, the better the mines will be, because obviously Zerg has less focus to spare than the Terran.
I think a really subtle way that could make them much more balanced would be to take away the ability to target fire with them at all. If they became more of like a random unit, kind of like the Scarab was for the Reaver, obviously not even on that level, because that was like a... Sometimes it hit you and just did zero damage, which would blow a lot of StarCraft II players' brains wide open. They're not aware of that concept, but it did happen in Brood War. But the idea that you can have that Widowmine and target specifically, you know, something really nice, that's kind of sick.
That'd probably help.
I don't know. I just naturally am opposed to making it more random. I like the fact that Terran can make it better with the targeting. I think you should incorporate skill whenever you can, so that's good. And they just need to make it not as good or more expensive or something.
It's a fair argument.
I would prefer that end of it.
Because it does reward micro. So yeah, I mean, that's a fair argument too. It just seems that, like, with the way it is right now, selecting and right-clicking what you want to blow up, you know.
There are cute little tricks. Like, if you see your opponent sending in the Zerglings first, then you keep switching around the target firing so that they keep resetting the channeling time. And then once the Banelings come in, then you click on those and that kind of stuff. That's kind of cute.
I
like that that's in the game.
We had White Raw on Kings of Tin yesterday, and he had mentioned it was great. But he had mentioned in talking about the Widowmine that he felt like the fact that it just wrecked, that it hit air too, was just the one thing that he was kind of, you know, like maybe that would be a change. Do you think that just makes it completely ineffective at that point?
It would be way better to just go Hellbats then for Terran.
Right.
Like, against Protoss, the only reason he'd say that is because they one-shot Oracles, and I've seen him, like, smash Lucifron and stuff with Proxy, Stargate, Oracle only and stuff. So, yeah, they'd be a redundant unit if they didn't have.
Sure. Well, everyone does have, you know, their...
Maybe just a damage reduction, because honestly, like, they're already 2 supply, which is kind of heavy for what it is. I don't know that you make it more expensive, because it is powerful situationationally, but it's also, like, there are a lot of times where it's not that great. Yeah, it's like, I've seen 5 Widowmines walk into an army, and they just get mowed down. Like, if the Hydros can see him, or if Bio sees him, They don't, you know, or Colossus for Pete's sakes. Like, if you have four Colossus and there's any Widowmines at all, they just don't do anything. They don't do anything at all. I don't know that they should, but what I'm saying is if you were to raise the cost, I think that makes them now kind of a dumb unit. It becomes like the Reaper used to be in Wings of Liberty. So maybe just reduce the damage. Certainly it should still shoot air. Maybe you increase the time between shots by even 10 seconds or 15. I don't know. But something, you know, I think everyone's in agreement that they need to be adjusted on some level.
I think the biggest problem with adjusting it is, like Ben said, they're almost redundant with the fire bat. Like, the only difference is that they can shoot air. So if you make it much worse, then the fire bat's just going to take over. Because the air options against Terran in the mid-game, they're like mutas, which are pretty squishy. So as long as you have Marines and you keep the Marines alive, then they're not going to be that big of a threat in the battle. They're more of like a utility unit. And then Protoss, actually I don't know how Protoss air does versus Terran. But I think if you nerf them much, then Hellbats are just going to take over, like Ben said.
Yeah, I mean, like right now, 75-25, if you think about it, it's the same cost as a Roach, and doesn't quite one-shot a Roach, but one-shots pretty much everything else. But they are very counterable if you do it right, if you have like a six-range unit or whatever. It's going to be very hard to nerf them, because if you nerf the Splash by 5, then they still one-shot Lings in Splash, but they're like worse against Marines when they stim with Combat Shield and stuff. Like, yeah, they're a pretty hard unit to nerf or adjust, because some situations are perfect, above perfect. Some situations they're totally naff when they blow up your whole army, though.
I will say this, though, too. I was really worried about the unit at release, and as we've gone on, I think it's more of a problem in TVZ, but I'm also pretty happy with how close to the mark they landed on this unit, because I think it's cool. Like Greg said, it rewards micro. One of the things I always talk about from the very beginning is I think it rewards a player that like thinks more ahead. I didn't really think of it as a frontline unit, like we're seeing right now with a Bio-Mind push against Zerg, but I like the idea of like, oh no, you're going to counterattack me through my Widowmine field, you know, like that kind of plays. I like that kind of stuff, so I like the concept. Just a little bit of adjustment, I think.
Yeah, at first I saw it as much more of a space control. You stop counterattacks or you zone units out from your tanks or whatever. Kind of much more like the Spider-Mines were in Brood War.
But they just make your army unengageable if you've got a certain type of army.
It's very positional and stuff.
They're a cool unit.
Any other, while we're on the topic of Hostock, any other like strategies that you guys are seeing that are new or unique or something different on the ladder these days?
You know, one of the matchups that's continuously changing that I really, really like, PvP changed kind of again. Because of the Mothership Core and how it functions in early stage, there's an increased chance in like a 1 or 2 gate expand, which was the Moby Dick build of Wings of Liberty, where it's like, oh my god, you're trying that? You're so weird. But now in Heart of the Swarm, it's become much more doable. You saw Oz do it in Pro League. And because of that Mothership Core and Photon Overcharge, it's just much more likely to be done, and I think that's cool. Also, on the subject of PvP, it's really funny. We're having a little bit of a Zerg moment here, because remember back when like Protoss were like, Void Rays and PvP are broken! Woo-hoo! Well, you haven't heard that in a while, and that's because everyone's going ground now, all of a sudden. It just fucking happened. It's the weirdest thing. Like, everyone's just like, it's like the end of The Usual Suspects. Kevin Spacey, like, phew, then it was gone. Like, Void Rays, they're gone. And everyone's going Archon, Chargelot, Immortal, Blink Stalker, Storm in PvP. And there's still people going Void Rays, and there's still some Colossus, but it's not like it was where it was like Void Rays 24/7. The matchup is in turmoil, and it's really fun because there's all kinds of different strategies coming out. I mean, for God's sakes, if anyone watched Pro League last night, spoiler! Spoiler!
Spoiler! Spoiler!
Spoiler!
Spoiler!
Spoiler! In one of the games, Hero from Kespa did a 1 gate expand Blink Stalker DT opening. And it almost fucking worked, except he didn't have any detection at all, so he lost to a single DT. But if he did 1 gate Blink Stalker DT Robo expand, he would have been fine. Interesting.
Any other?
TVT is pretty interesting. Like, so many builds are so viable now. You've got one base, fast gas, Widowmine drops. They don't quite one-shot a shitload of workers like they do in other matchups, like, because the workers have 5 more health. But that's become pretty common, then, like, following up with multiple expansions at once. 2 Reapers for, like, ground control at the start of the game is pretty common. Banshees are no longer a unit that you have to worry about. Widowmines take them out, and that's pretty much them gone. But yeah, the openings in general, there's like 10 viable openings that you can do that make the matchup very, very fun. And there's no like strict hard counter for one or the other, but Hellbutt Drops is still far too good in the matchup. I mean, if you think about how much that costs, it's 300 minerals, 100 gas, and if they get one volley off in your mineral line, that can be 6 or 7 workers dead immediately, and it's already paid for itself. Also, the Hellbats just, they kind of wander around getting healed and don't die. It's very annoying. Besides that, TVP is pretty fun. Like, Reapers are starting to make an appearance in the early game, and just at first you thought about the Mothership Core flying over to your base and dealing a lot of damage, but doesn't really deal that much damage anyway, so Terrans can get enough Marines out. Oracles are still really annoying against Terran, but yeah, that's about it. And TVZ is just TVZ. It's kind of hectic right now.
Well, In Control says PvP is interesting, and DeMuslim says TVT is interesting, and I'm just positive the words are going to come out of Iker's mouth that ZVZ is so interesting right now.
It's not.
Actually, tell us about it. Yeah,
mutas are wonderful.
God,
how did it come to this?
They're really fast, and they regenerate all their health like instantly. It turns out they're pretty good units when that happens.
Greg likes ZVZ because he's really good at it. Okay, but if you watch the matchup,
it's terrible to watch. I can't watch it, but it's fun to play.
I'll tell you what,
it's not fun to play at all. It's easy to play.
Moonglade on State of the Game had this like gorgeous like no, like I can't do Australian anymore, like my English and Scottish and everything's all fucked up, but he was like, he really likes EVZ, and he was talking about the intricacy of like putting Lings on Mutalis. I'm gonna be honest, as a pure spectator, when I watch EVZ and GSL Pro League and all that stuff, oh my god, it's just mutas versus mutas, and yeah, there's Lings below it, but that's it. There needs to be like a when two Zergs hit each other, Scourge are unlocked, and then you have an amazing chance for ZVZ, but I think Scourge and the rest of the game would fuck it up. But I think if it was like, you're playing a Zerg player, Scourge, unlock, that would be the sickest. It's like, you are now required to actually fucking micro, you lazy Zerg bastard. Good luck.
That would actually...
Scourge, I just wanted to make Mutalis.
It's really funny, Jeff, because I feel like you're so right. Like, that could solve everything, but you are also right. And like, how does that totally fuck everything else? I'm not sure.
Yeah, and they like remove the Colossus and add Reaver if PvP happens, and then they add Spider Mines and remove Widow Mines in TVT.
Actually, those two changes they just make for the entire game because it would make everything better.
I don't think you want Reavers, Greg.
I don't know.
With the way things clump, I think your face after 36 Hydras died with things here. I'm not even mad. What is this feeling?
I don't know.
Like, when this for the first time. My chest!
I don't know. Whenever I see Colossus, I make Corruptors, but then I have Corruptors, so I'd like to not have that happen anymore.
Yeah.
No, ZVZ is just awful to watch. I can't stand it, but I don't know. And if you play someone you're better than ZVZ, you either die to Banelings or you win. Like, it's kind of nice to have that at least.
And I mean, have you... Well, I know you probably, because you're down with that style, but is no one trying to combat Mutaling play with something else?
You've gotten it mixed in every once in a while. Like in Pro League, we saw a Roach Hydra Nidus game. I don't remember if he won. I think he might have won. But, I mean, because Muta is just so good right now that it's pretty much all that happens, it's actually a decent gamble to do something that can only beat Muta. Like, if anything else happens, you're screwed. But if they do go Muta, then you have some chance to beat it. So you do get builds like that occasionally. It's like various pre-planned all-ins that have major weaknesses but are okay against Muta. But the matchup is kind of bad enough to the extent that that can happen, and a Muta player can still win if they realize what's going on and they just react a little bit. So Muta is just far and away better. But people are still experimenting. Just nothing has worked yet.
And I'll tell you what, people are going to, once again, I'm going to talk about Pro League last night. Spoilers! They're going to cite Xenia versus Hydra last night. Hydra had so many more Mutalists that he engaged over the top of 3 Spore Crawlers in the Muta versus Muta battle and still won, but then died to the Fungals and the remade Mutalists after that. But we should never even move beyond the part where we say he engaged over the top of 3 Spore Crawlers. Like that, think of them as the Terminator in the office of Terminator 2 mowing down the cops. That's what those Spore Crawlers are. And he actually had so many cops that he didn't give a shit. He just kept fighting, and if it weren't for those fungals, he would have won. But then if those fungals were actually Meatless, he would have lost. So
they were.
Don't fight over spore crawlers.
Don't do it. Don't do it. All right, we're going to talk a little bit more about that if you want to. Open phones will be happening here in just a moment. However, it should. I feel like we've talked about it, and people have actually gotten angry when EG Liquid has done bad in Pro League, and we have not talked about it. So we did talk about it a few times. You guys, in fact, in control, you talked a little bit about the coaching and sort of the things that happened, and then Coach Park was announced, and round four has begun, and lo and behold, some shit is happening over there. In Pro League, and there's what two? Well, here's the results right here. As you can see, I'm going into round four, two games up. EG Liquid. Is Coach Park? Is he the reason?
Yeah, I mean, go ahead. Sorry, I've been talking too much.
I was just going to say, there's two new EG players as well that are doing pretty darn well for us too. So, Coach Park is definitely helping, but. Yeah, can't forget about Alive and Oz for now.
Yeah, I think it has to be said that for whatever reason, that doesn't necessarily need to be aired publicly, the system we had going into this fourth season wasn't working. The proof was in the pudding. They won one map out of the 20 before this season 4, or whatever you call it. It was absolutely abysmal performance. They were a couple of losses away from being shut out, and we weren't going to make the playoffs. There is still hope alive, and obviously that's been kept alive by a 2-0 start. But it was really, really bad, and the community was collectively, very rightfully so, saying, whoa, you guys hyped the crap out of this. This is supposed to be amazing. You know, this is kind of embarrassing. Kespa's just so much better. And then we pull in Coach Park, who's the winningest coach in Pro League history, if I'm not mistaken. He starts actually kicking some serious ass in that house. I can just tell you that. You do not. Coach Park is like... He doesn't walk in the room and you're playing solitaire or League of Legends. If that were to happen, he would just tear both your arms off and like stare into your soul and suck it out of your mouth. It just doesn't happen that way. So these guys are working hard, and I got to tell you, again, from the perspective of someone that watches all these matches, not the guy that talks to them all and knows them all, when I watch Oz play that PvP, when I watch Alive play that TVZ, and when I even watch Hero play the two PvPs, and I'm just talking about matches across these past two, they look like different players. They look like guys that have ground out specific strategies and are working really hard, as opposed to what I felt like going into this was like ladder practice executed okay, and maybe it worked, maybe it didn't, but now it feels like these are razor-sharp, Kespa-trained guys type of thing.
Yeah, I mean, I was actually kind of skeptical. I figured it would take a lot of time for the coach change to actually take effect because, like, he's really good at setting up the team for success, like managing the house, making sure the practice environment is good, getting the right people working, like working in the right situations and stuff. But that's not the kind of thing that I expected to really take effect overnight. And I'm sure the addition of Oz and Alive and them winning their matches, of course, also deserves a lot of credit for this. But really, like Jeff said, there's just been a massive change, and I didn't expect it to happen that quickly. I figured we were screwed for the season. Like, we were only allowed to win, or only allowed to lose four more matches or something before we're out of contention. I thought there was no chance, but, I mean, he seems to be taking effect quite quickly, so it's really, really cool.
Right on. You guys are
and like Ben said, too, the new players are sick. Like, Alive, let's not forget, he's a tournament winner, actually, and Oz was a... round of four Codas GSL, but at least a number two MVP tournament with the Kespa MLG guys hybrid tournament that MLG ran. Like, these guys are capable of big, big stuff. They fell off the grid for a while, and under Coach Park, they are looking like the savages that we knew them to be. And it's in EG TL town, but certainly in EG town, it's super exciting. And I can't wait for DreamHack, where you get to see at least Oz, but maybe Alive.
It'd be nice as well to see Alive.
Like, yeah.
Alive's like the forgotten tournament winner. Like, he won the $40,000 tournament, and everybody forgot. And then he was ranked one on Korean ladder and was regarded as like the best player in the world for a long time. And then nobody heard about him. Then he's back in Pro League, and he hasn't lost a match yet. So it's really cool to see him back.
Yeah.
Well, let's open up the phone lines. Let's take some calls. And while we do, there's a few other, I guess, news tidbits that have come out here over the past couple days. Let me make sure that the phone stuff is right so you can actually hear callers this time. And let me put up the phone information. So there we go. You can dial us at 909-581-8509 or Skype me, DJ Wheat, and it'll take your call. So Navi, who is a longtime Counter-Strike, Dota 2 clan, they have added a StarCraft 2 division, which is just cool to see more multi-game, or teams going to multi-genres like that, you know, like EG, like Complexity, like Copenhagen Wolves, Western Wolves, etc. But Strelok, Baby Knight, and Lowly, Happy Zerg, Monado, probably the names that you've heard of throughout the European circuit. But good on them.
This is actually the first time in a while we've had a new team come out with a lineup that actually could matter. Like Strelok, you haven't heard much from him, but he's a long-time solid player. Baby Knight has had good performances, Lowly as well, and then Happy Zerg, like, you've heard of the name before. And that's more than you get from most new lineups. But yeah. I mean, that's kind of to be expected when you have an organization like Na'Vi.
Well, they bought FXO EU, and I think one of the kind of interesting sideline stories here, too, is, like, FXO, very much so known for the Korean squad, you know, two-time GSTL champions, amazing players right and left. But their NA and EU squad, I don't know how they work, but you don't hear anything from them at all. And this is a result of that. Their EU squad, like, one of the languages coming out from there is, these guys are underperforming, and you don't really hear from them. But part of that's the organization's fault, too. It's not just the players. Like, they've actually had FXO EU for a very long time. And I don't know, I guess they kind of just sent them to tournaments, but I didn't see anything out of them otherwise. And of course, they're a European brand, so you'd see it more if you're a European, you know, denizen. But I'm hoping that Na'Vi, because this is their second time around, by the way, we need to remember that. They had a SC2 squad, and that failed too. And their owner came out and said, this is not working, we'll come back to this later. This is the later.
Right, this is.
And as like a Ukrainian organization, I'd like it, I don't know what the situation is, but somebody needs to get Damaga a fucking jersey if that guy doesn't already. I don't know how that guy doesn't have a team, and I don't know how a Ukrainian team comes back to StarCraft 2 and doesn't announce, we got Damaga! Like, how does that not happen? You know?
Yeah. And Na'Vi are, like, they were the best CS team for so long. Like, they're such a successful team when they put their mind to it.
Oh, yeah.
Have a really good training house and boot camp and stuff.
All right, we've got a ton of people knocking. Let's go ahead and take our first call. We've got Halo Dash on the line. Hello, welcome to Inside the Game. What's up?
Hey, how's it going?
It's Hello. Going good.
I was just asking for to all you guys. Unit don't get idea changing. What if let's start with the Hydralisk. What if the Hydralisk cost instead of 50 gas, 25 gas? Do you think it's reasonable?
No.
No.
Yes.
I don't think that. I think that'd be too good.
And for the Protoss, the Voider, what if we just reduce speed a bit?
Jeff?
Still sounds good.
I'm okay with these changes.
Yeah. Sure.
Anyway. I'm just playing with the map with the unit, so I'm just asking a general question. Okay, thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You know, because I'm always in those games like, God, the Void Ray is just so fucking fast. But
you know. One of the quickest ways to to call in and be like, hey, I'm a gold player or silver, is to just ask about nerfing the Void Ray. Just be like, man, those Void Rays, huh? How? What do you guys think about making them slower? It's like, okay.
Let's take area code 920. Hello, welcome to Inside the Game. What's up? Oh, they hung up, man.
Not that there's anything wrong with being in gold or lower.
No, there's nothing wrong.
It's just that there's a lot of fucking Void Rays down there, man. A lot of Void Rays.
Hello, we got area code 814. Welcome to the show. What's up?
I was just wondering, so since Aydra has been working with Kespa when he was playing with Brood War, how come he doesn't, like, implement, like, some of the things that they do to practice for games? Like, I was watching in the EG house, like, Stefano, and, like, he's always been asking, like, cause I think I heard sometimes, like, streaming, he's like, oh, I wish I had some, like, practice partners. How come, like, they don't just practice together?
Well, of course, as you asked that question, Idra and DeMuslim were actually dropped from the call. But I think in some, I'll let them answer. But I think in some regards, they've tried to implement some of that stuff. But I know that culturally, Idra has mentioned on the show that, you know, that doesn't always go in line. And Jeff, I mean, you're the one with the most experience in the house, so maybe you can like comment off of this while I try to get these guys back.
It's kind of a funny like byproduct too. People hear a sentence or they watch a stream and then they make a sweeping judgment off that. Like, they must not play together at all. Actually, DeMuslim and Stefano play a lot of custom games and they practice quite a bit, but you can't just play custom games for reasons we've talked about till we're blue in the face on the show, but I'll guess we'll do it again, and that's that people play differently when they're playing custom games. People will try out something that they want to work on, but perhaps the other guy doesn't necessarily need practice against. If you play against the same people over and over again, you're going to get like a stagnation in strategy, but also play styles, because there's so many different ways to play the game. So it's certainly important to play customs, but it's not the end-all be-all. And it's also funny, too, because a lot of people make the assumption that what Koreans do is they sit in their house and all they do is play custom games and they grind out thousands of hours of custom games. They don't. The majority of their practice is on ladder. But the benefit of being in a pro gamer house is not the custom games, but it's the discussion. It's wheeling over and talking about it. It's having a practice partner if you need it. But most StarCraft II players, including the Koreans, practice primarily on the ladder.
I just have one more follow-up, if I could. Does PG do replay analysis? Or like if Stefano or like you need help, like would you guys sit in a room and like talk about replays and or talk about strategies? Does that ever happen? Just curious.
Every single day we wake up, we walk downstairs, and we spend 10, 12, 14 hours of said day in the same room together, where someone will say, come check out this replay. Somebody else will say, what are you doing against this? Someone will watch somebody else's stream. We talk about StarCraft. We play StarCraft. Like, that's just a natural byproduct of living together. That's part of the huge advantage of having a pro gamer house that is lost when you don't live together. But no, there's not like a secret EG theater room that we walk into, and I'm like, gentlemen, I've brought you here for this two-base Colossus timing that is running amok on the North American ladder. And then we, like,
please review.
Break it down, and they're in, like, flight cadet suits, and then we deploy into So Say We All.
So Say We All.
Sure. Thank you so much.
All right, thank you for your call. Appreciate it. Take care. All right. We've officially lost the other two guys. Jeff, are you still with me?
I'm still here, man.
Okay. Your camera froze in a really funny face, but
did it? Oh yeah, that's a good one though. It's like I'm talking about something important.
It did. Yeah, absolutely. I'm gonna keep taking calls though while these guys they're obviously having some internet issue, heat and sun spots and stuff. And Arizona, dude,
noodle girl,
they got noodled. We're gonna take area code 928. Hello, welcome to Inside the Game. What's up? Hello. Hello.
Hey, I'm just wondering, what do you think about the huge nerf to the GSL price pool? Because now that all three regions are the same, isn't it kind of like their Korean server still has the most competition, but it has a much lower price pool?
Wasn't the prize distribution of GSL kind of wasn't it kind of top heavy anyway?
I'd have to look. I think what he's referring to is how they've said each region's going to have a $100,000 prize pool, but GSL was $162,000. I don't know enough to comment on that, but I can't imagine them going to GOM and being like, yeah, we're going to need you to offer $62,000 less now. So what I would ask you is just wait until the information gets clarified. I'm not saying you're wrong, because maybe you're dead right, but I just can't imagine it playing out that way.
No, actually, that's kind of an interesting point now that I look at it. I thought it was a bit more top-heavy than even this.
Well, it said, each one's going to be $100,000, and, like, when it came out with the top-heavy distribution, that was $100,000.
Although that's for the specific WCS. Like, nothing is stopping GSL from still having Hot Six as a sponsor and putting up.
Yeah.
So Greg and the Muslim who just joined us, he was asking about if there's less money going to the regions, or if there's, you know, a set amount going to the regions for the for WCS, what about GSL because it had a higher prize pool? But I believe that that is different.
Are you sure? Because I think they might want parity between the regions. I think they might want to be the same. And I'm sure GSL is free to bring in their own money and host side events. In fact, I think Total Biscuit confirmed that they are still able to host like GSTL and the Arena Champions or whatever the additional things are. But I think Blizzard kind of wants all the WCS regions to be as equal as possible, including prize money.
No, I'm actually really curious about that to see what they can do. If they could bump it up or... I don't know. I'm gonna have to look into that a little bit further because I'm not sure about the specifics of it all.
Okay, cool. I was just wondering. Thanks for having me on.
No, I appreciate the question. Thanks.
Yeah. See ya.
I'm gonna have to ask around about that one. All right. Let's take another one here. We have got Ben on the line. Hello, Ben. Welcome to Inside the Game. What's up?
To Muslim.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Excuse me, I'm getting allergies are crazy. I actually have a favor to ask Jeff now that he's in the Bay Area, I believe.
What can I do for you, sir?
I was hoping that you would use your star power to schedule a bar craft in the Bay Area so my brother and I can come get drunk with you.
I'm working as hard as I can on that. And yeah. I won't take credit for it. It's not me. But I'm the voice in the office saying we need to do it. I promise you.
Okay, because I've heard of some in, like, Irvine and Berkeley area. And for whatever reason, they have just chosen to treat us like the black sheep up here in Bay Area. I don't appreciate it.
I'll tell you what. San Francisco, home of the second best team in the NFL, will have a bar craft if I could have any say in it.
Second best. Oh, you're a Seahawks fan. Oh, I'm hanging up.
Obviously the best team in the NFL.
Wow, he actually hung up. He totally owned you, Jeff. He was like, I'm having none of it, man. I'm out of here. That's fucking awesome.
No, but if you're still listening, yeah, that's like obviously something that I don't know how that slipped below the radar. That should never have happened, but San Francisco has a huge – well, the Bay Area in general. Oakland as well has an awesome esports community, and that's definitely something we're looking to do. Absolutely.
Excellent.
And hopefully he can see past my Seahawk fandom to be my friend.
He might just walk up to you and punch you in the throat now. We've got Sam on the line. Hello, Sam. Welcome to Inside the Game. Sam, now's your chance to shine.
Hello, guys. Can you hear me?
We can.
Yeah.
Hello. Oh, thanks so much. I'm just actually amazed that I got through. It's the first time that I've ever called. And it's really amazing to speak to you guys. Thank you for taking my call.
No problem. What's up?
I've kind of an obscure question. I'm just wondering, most of the builds that I'm seeing at the high level throughout most of Wings of Liberty and now into Heartless Swarm have been created in Korea, and I haven't seen that many builds, excuse me if I'm wrong, that have come from outside of Korea that are being used in general sort of day-to-day play. Is there a reason for that, that European or North American pros aren't that good at creating builds?
Can I just ask maybe the obvious question here is, how does one determine the origin of a build? Exactly.
I know that that's probably a difficult thing to do, considering that it's most builds are usually a combination of several different people's builds.
I don't know. I think a part of it's just perception, because like Koreans are the bigger famous players that get more viewership and play important matches on a more regular basis. So sometimes they'll get credit for builds. I can't think of a specific example, but I know like outside of Korea, the 5-4-X Reaper build, everyone credited Morrow with it because he beat me in the finals of IAM Cologne. But really, LZ Gamer also claims credit for it. But there were just random newbies doing it on the North American ladder like a couple weeks into the beta back in the start of Wings of Liberty. So sometimes it's really, really hard to track the beginnings of it. But really, it just comes down to Koreans have a lot more players playing at a really high level and doing a lot more games, so they're more likely to stumble upon stuff. But on top of all that, I think that's also unfair, and I think a lot of builds do come out of non-Koreans.
And right now, the only league that's kind of constantly being shown is in Korea, so those are going to be the builds that people kind of pick up on and say, like, hey, this build is so-and-so's build.
Okay, thank you very much, guys. I appreciate you taking my call, and I really appreciate everything you guys do for the community.
Take care, man. Bye. Gonna start fucking... There's going to be like a I don't know, some sort of historian is going to research and find the origin of builds. One day, it'll happen.
Maybe.
One day. I just saw Jurassic Park in 3D, so that was...
Was it good?
So did I.
Oh, yeah, it was amazing, you guys. We got area code 917 online. Hello, welcome to Inside the Game.
Hey, guys, what's up?
Yo.
Not much, man.
All right, I have kind of a crazy theory as to your Inside the Game preferred place to air.
A crazy theory, you said?
Yeah.
Okay.
It kind of stems from the idea that of the book The Outliers by Malcolm Gladwell, which, if any of you guys are familiar with, it uses, like, real-world circumstantial data to prove kind of, like, phenomena. And, like, the phenomena would be the Koreans, like, kicking ass, right? So is there anything to, like, just the Korean language in general, just the mechanics of typing it and reading it, is there anything to that actually creating better mechanics for a computer pro gamer?
No. It's actually easier to type in Korean because they have the vowels on the right side and all of the consonants on the left side, so you kind of just, you tend to alternate back and forth because that's just how language works. The sounds alternate back and forth like that. So it's actually really easy to type in Korean, whereas our keyboards are actually laid out to make it fucking stupid to type, so we have to deal with that. So it's not really relevant at all, but if it went anyway, foreigners would be more used to dealing with weird patterns on the keyboard because of that.
I have a crazy theory. I think you took 5 bong rips before you called up to Inside the Game.
No, it's very directly related to something in the book.
I'm just kidding.
Oh.
Greg wants to know, what is this kidding you do?
Hey, thanks, man. No problem.
Can I piggyback off that point?
Please do, man. Please do.
What has anyone looked closer into the dietary habits of the different regions? Like, is there something to perhaps kimchi that makes you a better StarCraft II player? And conversely, does cheeseburgers make you a worse StarCraft player?
What was before StarCraft in Korea? Anyway.
Giant depression, lots of boredom.
Because isn't one thing that separates is the mechanics themselves?
That's because they play a shitload.
No, we can't seriously have this conversation. Please, don't.
Okay, all right, I'm done.
You are opening up Pandora's box. There's people who are like, yeah, I got a question. Do the Koreans care more and work harder than everybody else?
Maybe they're all aliens. I think my wife's alien sometime.
Me too. I think
she's
all women
Asian.
Are, to be honest with you.
That's true.
Women are from Venus. Men are from Earth. You know that book?
Yeah, I do. That one I read it. Yeah, specifically. Okay, we're going to take another one. We got area code 786. Hello, welcome to Inside the Game.
Hey, what's up? Just wanted to ask, when I watch Pro League, I don't know, I kind of see these really cool jackets and bright colors and everything looks really nice. And when I see Team EG, man, I don't know, man. I'm not liking the shirts anymore. They're kind of old, and I'm hoping you guys would tell me.
Totally fair.
The new coach, and you guys can upgrade the jerseys.
Let me play devil's advocate. Do you know how much hard work we put into printing those T-shirts? Do you know how much design went into putting an EG on the chest and then our sponsors? We did study groups on where to put the sponsorships. No, you don't get to just say that our jerseys aren't the coolest. No, you're absolutely right.
The thing is, we have so absurdly many sponsors that, you know, we have to reprint them every, like, 3 days, so it gets exorbitant to actually print that many shirts.
Just so you know, Carl, I'm representing the idea that because we have so many sponsors, we move from the shirt to the robe, mother trucker. Like, I think we list those sponsors down the side of our body length, like silken robe.
Actually, I'm here on the website to buy an EG jersey, and I see that only extra, extra large is available.
Our fan base is not as fat as everyone.
Everything else is out.
That's actually really cool to see. That's good.
That sounds weird.
But I have to second the caller here.
What about the double XL people? Why are you not buying EG shirts?
Because
what
they're waiting for the fucking Pro League jackets, bro. What the fuck?
No, I think that demonstrates that EG fans are slimmer.
Like back when they were cool, but I don't know, man. Like these Pro League jackets are pretty sick.
I agree
with you, and I'm going to do that typical in control thing. Jacket. Just know it's being discussed on the inside, but the reason that doesn't make public is because in esports time, when you discuss changes to a company like jersey or coats or pants or anything like that, your children's children might see the end of that conversation. Or, again, in esports time, maybe it's tomorrow. That's the crazy part. Like, it'll never happen. Tomorrow it happened. Or it never happened. So it's not fair to tell you that you're going to have the availability, but just know that we're aware of it. We're talking about it.
You guys, I have a crazy theory.
Do it.
All right? So I was like, I want to show to the streamers like the most extreme Pro League jackets that we have seen in the past, right? And I'm like, I remember there's some fucking pictures of Elky in some goofy-ass shit. So I went and I looked up Elky. And when I looked up Elky by itself, all I saw was pictures of him playing poker. And that's when I realized that Elky started playing poker so that he could get rid of all the pictures of him in goofy fucking jerseys from Pro League, man. Because it's not until you put in Elky StarCraft that then suddenly you get this one right here. And I'll tell you what, wouldn't want to be this guy right there. That thing. What the fuck is he wearing? What in God's name am I looking at?
Yeah. He would later go on to be one of the most successful tournament poker players in the history of the game.
I know. Isn't that crazy? And I can't find any of his pictures.
Look for Elky spacesuit. Everyone always calls him spacesuits.
Okay. Elky, I like that. Spacesuit.
Well, guys, all right. Thanks for having me on the show. Yeah. I just wanted to say real quick, In Control, they find your stream. And I love it when you bash on haters on the stream. That's the funniest part about it. So keep doing
thank you, man.
Keep reading the chat and keep bashing on them.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Awesome. Thanks, sir. Peace. Bye. Man, I just blew my own mind, you guys.
Look at that first picture. What did you just search for? What is that? How does that happen?
What do you mean?
Oh, that's a...
Which one?
The redheaded young lady.
Huh? That was
Elky. I mean, I'm...
Elky with orange hair.
Yeah, that was Elky, bro.
Yeah, okay.
It was.
No, it's...
Oh, no. It's... Yeah. Yes, do the search
again. Oh, yeah, weird. Elky space... That is weird. What the fuck?
Yeah.
That's crazy. Let's take another one.
Besides Chevy Asylum.
Which is just up there. I don't know. What's up with that? Okay. We're taking this one. Hello, John. Welcome to Inside the Game.
John.
Hey. I didn't know if you guys already talked about this or not, but what do you think is going to happen to players like Moonglade who are in, like, Australia region? And then that's it.
I think gonna play took in a different Gutless region. Question, man. Be ashamed.
It's sad because the C server had their WCS, and they flew out HD and Pain User and Tastosis, and it was a really nice tournament. But outside of that one tournament, I think the C server will kind of continue to do what it's done, which is do its best at being self-sustaining. And, you know, they all made a trip out to MLG. It was awesome to see them. Australians continue to be perhaps the nicest people on the entire planet, just collectively. I've never met a more continuously happy and positive group of people. But being left outside of this big change really, really sucks. But if I'm Moonglade, if I'm an Australian... I'm probably used to it at this point in time. They've gotten left out of just about everything. And I'm not saying that's a good thing or that's okay, but that's just kind of the way it falls.
So do you think he's going to be moving somewhere?
I think if he has the option to, perhaps, but that's the question that a lot of people are asking right now.
Right.
People that even have a WCS are like, is this the region I want to play in? Should I be here? Because the other thing to look at too, guys... If we do make it into that, well, when we make it to that second year of WCS and I need to be in a studio every weekend, the proverbial I, the North American, the European, the Korean pro gamer, whatever, it's not like that studio is a trailer that gets lugged around the continent. It's in one place. So esports is stepping up, but everyone's going to have to move to a certain extent that wants to be a part of it at some point or another, unless you happen to be in that city. Which is pretty cool, if you are.
All right. Well, thanks for answering my question.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
A few people have also expressed concern about those SCA players. And if they don't move, how they have a shitty connection off the bat.
Well, they're used to that, too.
Yeah, so. They are. That's true. That's true.
Yeah.
We got Scott on the line, gentlemen. Scott, welcome to Inside the Game.
Hi.
Hello.
So I was a Zerg player for a while, and I switched to Protoss. And both of my leveling up on the ladders, I found that every time I would get promoted in a league, it would become more fun to play because I would face less cheeses, and my games were more determined on how my skill. So how do you think, if you're Blizzard, how does Blizzard handle balancing the fun of StarCraft to keep the people that try it out over time without compromising like top-end balance? Because obviously top-end balance is the most important thing.
I don't know if you can. Yeah. RTS just has like such a high barrier to entry. Like, you just have to kind of accept that you're not going to know what's going on, that you suck for a while. If you dumb it down too much, then you're just going to end up with a shitty game at the high levels. It's just, it's not designed for casual play particularly well.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're trying to do the best they can with things like unranked matches, fighting against the computer so that that unranked match player doesn't then call you a boob anyways, and you can feel good about yourself. but then also like little reward things like unlocking dances, unlocking avatars, unlocking skins. Those kind of things don't actually matter to the balance of the game almost at all. But it does make a player feel good about accomplishing something. So it's kind of like that golden star sticker that you got handed in like the third grade. It doesn't do anything, but it makes you feel good. And Blizzard's trying to do the most of that they possibly can because it walks the fine line of having the best RTS, but also a newbie-friendly experience.
Yeah, it's a good answer. HOTS has brought a lot of good stuff for that. I've reached the point where I can have a lot of fun in StarCraft now, but, you know, I have a lot of friends who play Dota, and we all used to play the same game together throughout several games, but I'm kind of sad that I can't bring them to StarCraft 2 because every time they come, they just quite can't get over the hurdle.
Well, you're like you're a successful convert, though. You're what Blizzard and StarCraft wants. Like, right. You're someone who put in the time and realized, wow, it's way better playing in Platinum than it was playing in Gold. It's way better playing in Diamond and in Master, mm-hmm. so on and so forth, so that you're traveling down that pursuit and finding the game more better as you get better at it. But a lot of people sit down, they have a job, they have school, they got a family, they want an immediate experience right now, they play a game, they're like, this is pretty cool. But then the guy's like, LOL, you're an idiot, and starts dropping mules on him and just runs them over, and they go, I don't really like this game. I'm going to go play something more friendly. And,
of course,
that happens a lot.
You've also got the people that just want to see the world burn. Like, there's no doubt in my mind that there are guys that just pick up the game, and they're like, wow, these cannons are pretty fucking sweet. And so they just, their career is like building cannons and cannon rush people, and they're like, holy shit, I've discovered the Void Ray. Like, wow, I'm going to make 30 of these, you know? And I mean, frankly, I find that whole concept fascinating that you run into these people. And, you know, you're right. As you progress on, you start to filter them out a little bit. But, man, I like, let it be a free-for-all. Like, I think for guys like you that are going to fight their way out and try to get better, then you are rewarded. And there are going to be guys that are fighting each other's 20 Void Rays in Silver League for fucking ever, man.
Yep.
And that's okay.
If they have fun, that's fine. That's
exactly.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
So as a follow-up question, if Blizzard makes a crap ton of money with this game, let's say they pull a WoW and they just make ridiculous bank for some odd reason, is it ever possible that they rebalance the game for team matches? Because 4v4s are so silly because the units are made.
It's not money-related.
Is it just never possible?
Man,
no.
Then go to sleep right now and have a dream, because that's the only time you're ever going to see a balancing of a team game, man.
That's fair.
I mean, honestly, it's just it's never going to happen.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But thanks for your call,
Scott.
Thanks for having me. Take care. Bye-bye. And to Muslims, like, he's shattered because, what? They won't balance for a team game.
Yeah.
It's not going to happen.
Yeah.
It's not going to happen. Let's keep going.
Good.
Area code 919. Hello. Welcome to Inside the Game. What's up?
Hey, guys. My question kind of regards balance a little bit. And so I've been watching a lot of streams recently, especially kind of Andrew's stream. I've been seeing top-notch players kind of get taken down by really silly builds, like basically Widowmine and Elbatross and Nath, Widowmine and stuff like that. And my question to you is, do you think that Blizzard's going to kind of take care of it a little faster than they did with the Infestor and Queens of Liberty, or are they more focused with the WCS?
I mean, that kind of thing always happens on the ladder, even towards the end of Wings of Liberty. Like, if you're... You don't see that kind of stuff much in tournament play because there's lots of risks involved with a lot of the things you're seeing. And it will settle down, of course, but just generally speaking, you see a lot more of that on the ladder, and sometimes random shit just happens. You can't account for everything, and usually a competitive environment and knowledge of your opponent can compensate for that. But when you're playing against the ladder, you have people who have nothing to lose, and it doesn't really matter too much anyway, so they're not worried about taking those risks. So sometimes you just get caught, and like that happens, and that's always going to be the case. I'm sure it'll get better as the game gets more balanced and more figured out, but it's not necessarily something Blizzard has to fix. It's just kind of the nature of the game.
Yeah. Nor do I think the WCS planning and organization is having an adverse effect on the balance team.
Yeah, David Kim's definitely not involved in that.
Two completely different things.
I might have a cutting-edge things. Oh, wow.
What?
What? Mm-hmm. EG, 1 minute ago, just tweeted that we got a new sponsor, ZAM Network.
Write it down.
I don't know what that is.
Add it to the list.
All right, thank you very much for your call.
Damn it, all stuff. Colin, why? All right, never mind. False alarm, guys. It's all law.
Oh, they're just... Oh, yeah, they're making, like, guides and cheat sheets and whatnot for champions and all that kind of stuff.
Awesome.
Really exciting.
Let's... take this one. We've got Richard on the line. Hello, Richard. Welcome to Inside the Game.
Oh, crap. Hello?
Hello.
Hello.
Oh, hey. Hey, so you guys, I know EG is moving to the Bay Area. Do you guys have any, like, more information as to exactly where they're moving? Because I myself live in the Bay Area.
Well, I guess it is time for me to finally divulge some information. You may know about a historical landmark off of the San Francisco shores. It's called Alcatraz. And we're gutting the whole fucking thing, and we're turning it into the island of esports. I'm just kidding. I don't, Jeff.
What are you asking?
Just about what? Why San Francisco, I suppose. Like, oh. Are there any specific plans for San Francisco, so to speak?
Yes. Obviously, big things are in the works, but EG's always been located here. Our CEO, Alex Garfield, lived here. He lives here strategically because a lot of the big esports companies, but not even esports, I'm just going to say it, like gaming and new age media companies are here. Astro, CBSI, all that stuff, they're all here. IGN, you know, was a big decision there too. Twitch. These are all big partners and big movers in the esports scene, so that they want to be there for that. But also, if Blizzard's going to grab the reins and start to make WCS a bigger deal globally, they'll probably try and make it a California thing, so you're going to want to be in that area. But what I just said is not official, so don't like, honey, we're moving to California, you know, like, and then like later tweet it in control, you son of a bitch, I quit my job. So hey, that's the only reason I can give you, as far as I know.
Yeah, by the way, it's free, Jeff. This is actually Noggin. I faced you on ladder a couple times.
Ma! Yeah. Face is the polite way of saying he's beaten me, I think, 3 times now. Hello.
Well, that's cool, though. So, all right, cool. Thanks, guys.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
I'm glad I could be here to facilitate your 15 minutes of fame.
Bitterweed.
No, it's fine. It's fine. All right. We'll take another call. Area code 941, hello. Welcome to Inside the Game. What is up?
Just wondering how much each of you guys make a month.
Oh, yeah, because, you know, how much do you make a month? Why don't you share that with us first?
I don't have a job. I just live.
Yeah. Yeah. You know what?
I make about $350. About $350.
Oh. Why? I'm curious. Why do you... Are you hoping to get into esports?
Well, I'm kind of already in it, but... StarCraft is just fun to watch.
Okay. But why do you want to know how much?
I'm curious.
Oh, okay.
Because I don't know, just wondering. Doesn't everybody wonder that?
I don't know.
I'm sure people would like to know. Are you allowed to say that or what?
No. I mean, just as like a... This is going to sound condescending because there's like almost 6,000 people listening, but I don't mean it that way.
Okay, what is it?
You typically don't want to ask someone what their salary is. It's considered rude. You might be European, in which case, again, there's like a lot of things you guys ask each other that's not considered rude, but in America, in God's country... don't talk about... There's four things you don't talk about. Religion, politics, salaries, and women. And if you cannot do those things, that last one was for the... I got yelled at by a feminist guy on Twitter. I'm a little bit bitter about it. A little bit bitter.
Really?
But yeah.
I would feel comfortable saying that I make enough to support my family and enjoy a good life.
All right.
And listen to myself in the background.
Can I ask one more thing?
Oh, I suppose.
Right.
I'm worried about giving you permission to do this, but sure. What is it?
All right. So you don't have to say any numbers, but out of the three EG members here, which one makes the most and who makes the least out of them? Or are they all the same?
Well, let me answer this for you, okay? Let me answer this for you, sir. All right, here we go. This is the breakdown. You ready to go? It is actually IDRA and In Control who are making much less than the Muslim because the Muslim has a side business. You see, he orders surplus of Girl Scout cookies, and then he sells them in the off-season.
So smart.
And as a result, he's raking in more money than any fucking Korean StarCraft II player is making on a yearly basis. And so that's how it breaks down. The Muslim and then IDRA and In Control are underneath that. Because he's got an amazing Girl Scout cookie surplus business that makes millions.
That's actually genius.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
All right.
But just to go off of DJ Wick's.
Thanks for answering me and stuff. So have a great day.
Thanks.
But go ahead.
But just this gets brought up a lot because people do want to know, and I'll just it's impolite to ask. It shouldn't be said. No player will come out and say this is how much I make unless they then make that statement because I just said no player would say that. That's the only reason they would is to prove me wrong.
Destiny's about to tweet it.
Yep, someone will tweet that. Oh, right, it'll be Destiny, right. But EG is one of the top teams in terms of fighting as hard as they can to give a sustainable salary to their players, which means I make a real living wage, I can save up and buy a car, I can furnish a house, and I don't have to do it in my mom's basement. And I do that as well as a lot of the other players on our squad, but they do it by like having a very fine detailed contract where it says, here's the things you do, here's what you give to us, and here's your responsibilities. We work real jobs, basically. So it's important to put a little bit of information out there without being like weird because, I don't know, until we're making millions of dollars, it shouldn't be discussed publicly what we make because that's just kind of weird, I think.
Yeah,
maybe I'm way too conservative. Maybe it's Ben in Europe. Does everyone know how much everyone makes?
No. Someone tweeted and say, "Hey, in Europe it is exactly the same thing." I mean, honestly, like it's, I don't know.
Because I do know that as a prude American, a lot of times that's what's just the case. Like they're like, "No, you're just an American."
Well, I mean, even that aside, it says in our contracts we're not allowed to say what our salary is to anyone, but particularly publicly.
Rules.
About Europeans anyway, like in America, like what you do as a job is pretty much like the talking point or starting talking point of any conversation of getting to know anybody. Whereas in Europe, we're like way more lax on like what you do for a living. But yeah, we're still not. If you ask somebody what they earn per year, like that's not something you really ask. If somebody chose to brag about what they earn per year, that's totally different. But yeah, we don't ask.
Yeah, and you know what happens? If you brag about what you earn, then you look like a douchebag. So it's just like all around is just a dumb question overall. I would have been happier if you would have been like, are any of you homeless because of esports? Nope. Okay. Must be a viable career path then. Right on. Take another one as we get near the end, and I'm sure Goatlust is going to be loading the chamber. God, there's actually so many calls that they're going off the screen. Which is good, you guys. That is good. We're going to take this one. We're going to take Ian's call. Hello, Ian. Welcome to Inside the Game. What's up?
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me on. I had a quick question about Pro League regarding EGTL going in. It seemed to the community that they were sort of the foreigner hope. And now with the addition of Oz and Alive going into this next part of the season, does that sort of cheapen the wins that they've been receiving, considering that they're not veteran EG players?
No. We actually partnered with Team Liquid specifically so we'd have a squad large enough to compete in Pro League, so it was never really about we're going to do this with foreigners and we're going to do it as EG. It's a partnership between two organizations to fight in a very prestigious team league that goes on all year long and has tremendous exposure. So when EG or Team Liquid recruits Koreans, it's not cheapening any win at all. It's nice when Stefano, Thorzane, Idra, Demuzm, whoever goes over there and trains to see them make an appearance in perhaps that bracket of Pro League. That's like a cool opportunity that is otherwise very rarely provided, and I would almost say never, except that Major's on Team 8, so now I can't say that. But otherwise, it's really hard.
All right. Thank you guys very much.
Yep. You're welcome. Thank you.
And of course, you know, you throw in the factors of coach and all that stuff. I'm sure that helps team morale overall. And
oh, yeah.
It's like 1,000 different things. I don't know that you can pinpoint one particular thing. All right. We'll take this one, and then we'll take a few more. We got some time. Area code 253. Hello. Welcome to Inside the Game.
Hello. I'm just wondering, there was an incident between Stefano and Demuslim, and some shouting were on stream.
Was there some shouting?
What happened there?
Between Demuslim and Stefano?
On Stefano's stream, is this?
What?
Yeah. How do I answer that?
Well, you don't have to if you don't want to, but...
Your life is led into the internet.
He's a rather messy young lad. And trying to make him clean up after himself is quite a chore. And everybody knows what he's like. You get a very polite F off if you ask something of him. And yeah, I guess there was a little bit of shouting on his stream. But yeah, like nothing major.
We're all pretty good friends. So we all kind
Idra, of Idra looked like he loved every second of that right there. So, yeah.
Well, Greg actually feeds off of awkwardness. It's like a weird...
I hear that happening. I started to play better and stuff. It's awesome.
Oh, shit. Oh, shit. That's all right. Well, there you go. It was about cleaning up. And they're out. They're out. I totally understand, man. We got area code 646 on the line. Hello, welcome to Inside the Game.
Hello, thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I was wondering, if a person wants to get into pro gaming, what's the steps that he needs to take, especially in StarCraft 2?
Get good at the game?
I mean, get good at the game, obviously, but, you know.
Yeah, I mean,
you,
to be honest...
Do you guys have a strategy book or some sort of game plan?
Artosis does. Some people, it helps some people to take down notes. It obviously helps you remembering things. And if you can identify the important information, then keeping track of it's obviously important. But the biggest thing is just play a lot, watch pro games a lot, pay attention to what actually happens in the pro games, not just watch them for fun, but really just practice.
Okay.
That's as close as a nice answer as you're going
to
get. Because the like dose of reality I would give you is, if you're asking the question, like, how do I become a pro gamer? I mean, you know, believe what they say, chase your dreams and, like, shoot for the stars. And if you, you know, if you can dream it, you can will it. All that good stuff. All those posters are true. But for the most part, it is an extremely, extremely difficult path that is, it's kind of like showbiz. It's kind of like, I'm going to move to Hollywood to become an actor. There are so many people that did that and then randomly got super famous. But there's countless others that had huge qualities to them, tried their best, and just didn't get it. Just no luck, just didn't get it. And pro gaming is really hard that way. Like, you could be an amazing player and stream with a great personality, and you can do commentary, and you'll have two people watch you for a year. Can you make it through that?
Yeah. Well, caller, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
I hope that...
Well, I didn't mean to sober him that bad, but shit.
I mean, it's. I think it's important to.
I just think it's... I think it's a... It's a good thing for people to really try for what they want, but it's important that people understand that it's not like you hit mid-masters and now you're a pro gamer. It's like, fuck, man. It's way too hard.
It sounds like there's like a motivational poster or a song behind that.
Or at least a demotivational
poster. Mid-masters and you're a pro gamer. Like, someone get tempo on that shit.
It's like a picture of a soaring bald eagle, but then below it says, like, these are going extinct, and then that's your poster.
All right, Goatlust, I saw you calling in. Where are you, sir? It's time to take our final question of the evening. I have no idea what it could possibly be, but where is he? All right, we're just going to wait for Goatlust now. So, thank you guys for... There he is. He's on top of shit, man. Look at that. Fucking from Brisbane, Australia. Let's take this guy's call. Ladies and gentlemen, the one and the only, Goatlust, welcome to Inside the Game. Goatlust?
Oh, yeah.
Hello?
Oh, yeah.
Is it like the most dramatic, like, oh, hey, fuckers.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, Goatlust, don't be like those bad callers. All right, I'm going to hang up on him and hope that he calls back in.
My apologies, fellas. Oh!
Give me some. Yo, what is up?
Just haven't used Skype since I got this new headset. Sorry, fellas.
I understand.
Had to quickly run in there and change the input and the output devices.
Sounds technical.
Oh, God, yeah, mate.
Did you have to look that shit up on
Google? Did you try restarting it first?
No, I didn't. I knew exactly what the problem was as soon as I was like, oh, fuck, the call's been going for 10 seconds. I haven't heard shit.
What's up, man? How's it going?
Not a huge deal. Starting to get a bit chilly here, you know. Fucking, going all right.
Excellent. What is your question this week?
Well, with the whole Casper thing on the horizon, I know this is looking back a little bit, but people were like, oh, you know, HOTS is off over on the horizon as well. You know, these Casper guys are coming in. And people commonly held, you know, the sort of opinion that Heart of the Swarm was going to level the playing field with the Casper players, maybe even give the foreigners a hand up. And I'm wondering if you think, you know, with the first little bit of HOTS we've had, if you think any of this stuff has happened, or if you think, you know, when we go into the next whatever it is tournament, when we have some foreigners against Koreans, you know, we're going to see anything... that looks more like foreigners doing all right, thanks to Heart of the Swarm, or do you think this is all bullshit?
I know, we already had the MLG, and foreigners just got destroyed there, but it wasn't the best possible representation, but it was just complete utter destruction. So I'm not sure about that one. And we haven't actually seen too much competition between the ESF and Kespa guys, so we don't really have like objective evidence of that, but just logically it has to have leveled the playing field. Like, what advantages are left? The game has changed enough that it's down to how good you are, not how much experience you have with the units or anything like that. But I don't really feel like it's helped foreigners too much.
Yeah, I think if anything, I really do feel like Heart of the Swarm is a more difficult game than Wings of Liberty, and I think anytime you raise the skill ceiling any higher, the Koreans have more room to show their prowess, and I'm happy with that. Like, I don't think I'd like a StarCraft that evens the playing field between foreigners and Koreans. I think that's a worse form of StarCraft. What I do think, though, and this is, I'm glad I'm actually finding a segue into what I want to talk about, because Wheat was joking about like what makes the guy asked, and Wheat was joking about what makes Koreans better than non-Koreans. This has been discussed thousands of times, right. And I can do it again, and I'm going to do the short version real quick. It's because of cultural infrastructure and just success feeding off of success. And in Korea, there's more pro gaming houses, there's more leagues right there, there's more ways to look at yourself as a pro gamer and say, I could go somewhere with this. And what I think is having a real shot at evening that playing field is by spreading out that close to that level of prestige. And like we talked about earlier in the show, absolutely Koreans are going to relocate to grab a lot of that prestige up for themselves. But the more opportunities we give out there where foreigners have a chance to really grab onto something and it's much more obtainable than relocate to Korea, qualify for CODES, achieve a high rank in CODES, and then sustain CODES, which is my way of saying fuck off, then I think you're talking about a better scene that's evening the playing field without making it a worse game. And I think that's the best – that's the most optimistic way we could look at this as far as I'm concerned.
Oh, shit, yeah. just to follow up on something you said there, Jeff, with some of the Kesper fellas coming in and, you know, the game being a bit more hard in general now that Heart of the Swarm's around, do you feel like there's room for, like, the real fucking mad dudes like Flash and Jadong to get right up there and get into it? Because I've got to say, I was pretty impressed with Jadong's play in Pro League,
yeah.
At least in the match he won. Like, really nice.
I think so. I think the same problem that plagues Wings of Liberty, it's really just a StarCraft II thing. Part of the reason why Jadong, Flash, you know, your Bisous, your Storks, some of those guys in Brood War were able to be like, hey, we're better than everybody. And then Flash is like, I'm actually better than everybody, everybody. And he stayed up there forever, is because the game had such a tremendously high skill ceiling that you could differentiate super talent, super work ethic from everybody else, even on a Korean standard. And one of our big concerns going into StarCraft II was that they had dropped that skill ceiling so low that everyone was going to be taking games off of everyone. That was the case in early Wings of Liberty. We're now seeing that's less the case, but it's not enough less the case that anyone in their right mind would make the argument that this game is as hard as Brood War was. So yes, a Flash will dominate. Yes, a Jadong will have success. And yes, like an Innovation will distinguish themselves from everybody else, but they won't do it by such a large margin that they're like a five-time, you know, superstar winner that won everything in between and did this disgusting run.
Yeah, like, and it also comes down to the players, because like in Brood War you had the Flash Jadong Bisou, and Bisou was much more the pure mechanics. Not like he was called the revolutionary because of the whole DT Corsair thing, but he wasn't really like much of an innovator. He was more so there because his mechanics were just mind-boggling. If you watched him play, it was just incredible how fast he was. And StarCraft II is much less about that. Still matters, of course, but much more so about strategy and decision making and other little things. And so we see that Flash and Jadong, particularly Flash, are still doing amazingly well, but Bisou not quite as good. In fact, he struggled quite a bit towards the beginning. So, like, HOTS has given them the opportunity to become dominant, but it's still down to the player. Like, Rain's better than Bisou now. That obviously wasn't the case in the Brood War. So it's down to the player and where their individual talents lie and how it lines up with HOTS. But I do think it's all been leveled, and like whoever's good is going to be good.
Yeah, it's also worth noting, too, that we're in a different atmosphere. Like, your Flash, your Jadong, those guys, they played Brood War for a very long time, but they played the same Brood War for that entirety of the time. Like Greg said, Bisou was an innovator because he discovered Corsair DT combo. But people were discovering things within a game that was otherwise figured out up until that time. Like, people were playing very similar styles because the game was just the game the whole time. But with Wings of Liberty, Heart of the Swarm, Legacy of the Void, and then balancing that happens in between, you're going to get a lot of guys that are very much so better than the rest, and they're going to still be, you know, a shoulder or head above, but they're not going to remain there because there's going to be valleys and plateaus.
All right, GoatLust, I know you could probably keep on asking away, but we do need to start to wrap up, so we'll keep
right, I understand, sir.
Some of the mystery for next week. So thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
All right. Catch you later.
Take care, guys. All right. Let's do our final thoughts and wrap up. As always, I'll start with the Muslim.
Hey, guys. Thank you for watching. I really appreciate it. I'd like to say a thank you to Team EG and all its sponsors, Raid Call, Monster, Kingston, Razer, Astro, Intel Extreme, InWin, Beyond Gaming, and Split Reason. All been fantastic. Thank you for supporting me and putting me where I am. If you want to check me out, follow me on Twitter, @TheMuslim. I've got a Facebook fan page too, TheMuslim, and I stream a lot on Twitch TV, which is www.twitch.tv/TheMuslim. So thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
So, of course, as always, to all the same sponsors that Ben just listed, big thanks to EG and all of them. You can follow me on Twitter, @Idrajit. Facebook.com/Intrajit. See what else. Watch my stream, twitch.tv/EG_Idra. Been streaming pretty much every day, and that should continue, except for the next few days. I will actually be gone for a little while. Then after that, I'll be back to streaming regularly. And the tournament season, I don't know if what WCS dates have been announced yet, but everything will be starting up pretty shortly. So a lot of us have been out of competition just because there haven't been as many tournaments. So you can start watching that again pretty soon.
And last but not least.
Yo, yo. Dude, do me the favor of follow me on Twitter, EG In Control, if you haven't already. Also, my Facebook fan page. Just search for In Control on there. I've been updating it more, asking questions, but it's also a good place where my moderators let you know when I'm streaming or if I'm commentating or hosting DreamHack, which is kind of coming up, that kind of stuff. Shout out to everyone that's been kind of interacting on the stream. It's been a really good time on Twitch TV, In Control TV on there. Been commentating, but people have been really, really positive and great feedback and great interaction. So I just want to say thank you guys because that means as much to me as hopefully the entertainment I provide means to you. And then, yeah, just DreamHack's coming up in a couple weeks. I'll be hosting that alongside Take with casters Artosis and Apollo, so definitely check that out. From now until then, I'm living in the Bay Area, working my butt off to make this awesome. And thank you to EG, of course, for making that all possible, the sponsors as they were listed. And, you know, just thank you guys for tuning in as well. The audience for Inside the Game has been fantastic, and thank you so much.
I would echo a lot of what you guys said. Just thank you to the community. I want to apologize to those who couldn't make it in. It's really awesome to see more and more people calling in, and I do appreciate when you guys prepare stuff when you're coming on. Trust me, we can tell. It's noticeable. So thank you, and sorry that we couldn't get to all your calls. That being said, tomorrow we do have Live on 3 Wednesday night, show Friday on One More Game TV. We've got the Virtus Pro manager, Lex, and we have got, of the Star Ladder 5 CS champions, and then the Star Ladder 5 Dota 2 runner-up, the Dota 2 champion, Loda, of No Tidehunter, and Call of Duty champion, Furiko Parasite, is going to be joining us. So we're going to have three interviews tomorrow, and it should be great. Yes.
Virtus Pro, with that win, takes the second most tournament wins in the history of CSGO. Did you realize that?
Yeah, you're right.
They tore up to second place.
They did.
With one win.
I know. It's kind of funny. And you know what? It lands them a spot in Live on 3. Congratulations.
That is the ultimate
congratulations.
Prize.
Congratulations. Yeah, so... thank you, guys. We'll see you next time on another episode of Inside the Game. Join us tomorrow for Live on 3, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and we'll see you next time, guys. We're out of here. Peace.